Lecture 15, Dialects. Where do you draw the line?
Remember how I said in the last lecture that there's no such thing as a language? Well, we're going to look at that concept a little bit more in order to understand the fascinating process that the natural history of language is. We should always think less about whatever we heard about some dialect somewhere on TV than the globe. Take a picture of the globe in your head. Think of the globe in elementary school, or think of the globe that's the universal logo at the movies. That kind of globe. And spin it in your head and think about all the countries in pretty colors on that globe. And then think about languages spoken in all of those countries, and not just Europe, but Africa, Australia, and then remember that there are about 6,000 languages in the world, and then remember that most of these languages are bundles of dialects, so that's what we're dealing with. And it's nice to imagine that you could look at all of these languages, even if they're bundles of dialects, and label them as bundles of dialects that are all more like each other than they're like anything else. And so we could still preserve this idea that there's a such thing as a language. But the way the world really goes, the way history has really gone, the way geopolitics has really gone, it becomes very difficult to uphold that distinction. Like, we'd like to think that each country has a language. But no, it just doesn't work that way, no matter how hard you try to shoehorn things into that reality. And there are various reasons why this just doesn't work. So, for example, often there will be varieties of a language, and notice that I'm avoiding saying language or dialect, just varieties. Varieties of a language where we, looking at them on paper or hearing them, would think, well, those are dialects. Those are kind of like Cornwall versus Brooklyn or something like that. Those are akin in a way that suggests that they are part of the same bundle. But often, world happenings determine that those are considered different languages. And so, for example, really, up in Northern Europe, there's a language called Scandinavian. A lot of the people who speak the languages wouldn't want to hear that. But on the mainland, not Iceland, but in the mainland of Northern Europe, there is a single language, Scandinavian. Now, what we're taught is that there are three languages. Denmark has the Danish language, Sweden has the Swedish language, and Norway has the Norwegian language. And, okay, they have a right to call them languages, but the main reason that they do is because these are different nations with different identities. The fact is that a Dane, a Norwegian, and a Swede can have a conversation. Danish presents more problems to the other two than the other two do to a Dane. But basically, they're the same thing. And so, for example, the word for big or large in Swedish is stora. Now, in Danish, that completely separate language, it's stora. And in Norwegian, which is a whole different language entirely, the word is stora. Or, to be fairer, in Swedish, the word for goose is gås. Then, in Danish, it's gås, and in Norwegian, it's gås. And so, you can do that again and again. Now, of course, the languages differ on many words, and sometimes in tricky ways. But as you can see, these are hardly as far apart as, say, Russian and Japanese. Or, really, often, Russian and Ukrainian, they are basically the same language in different varieties. And it once was that the Danes ruled Sweden and Norway. So all of this region was, as the linguistic situation would lead you to think, one area with one people. There was no such thing as a Swedish language, so to speak, until Sweden became independent in 1526, and there was no Norwegian language until Norway became independent in 1814. And so, until the independence of those countries, the language varieties of Sweden and Norway were just considered to be dialects of Danish, which essentially they are, or you could say that Danish is a dialect of Swedish. All three of them are variations on the same thing. They're considered three different languages because they happen to be spoken in what has happened to become three different countries. Another example of this is a place called Moldova. Moldova is a little kind of dowager's hump that sits on Romania. And Moldovan was once considered just one way of speaking Romanian. And it was just the way they speak Romanian in Moldova. Moldova happened to be eaten up by the Soviet Union, and for a long time it was one of the SSRs. And at that time, there was this bizarre notion that Soviet scientists had that the speech of Moldova has to be considered a separate language from Romanian. And so Moldovan grammarians were assigned to write grammars, descriptions, you know, teach yourself in 40 days Moldovan, the idea being that it wasn't Romanian, it was something different. And so these poor guys would have to sit there and write these grammars of Romanian, but in the Cyrillic alphabet and in Russian. And it was the exact same language. There are practically no significant differences between them. But Moldovan became, quote unquote, a language because it was considered to be separate from Romania, just in terms of lines on a map and how hard it was to get through customs, if you could at all. So it was all very arbitrary. Culture can make people consider themselves to speak different languages when in the eyes of whoever's up there, they don't. So for example, and I hope I don't hurt any feelings on this, but Hindi and Urdu are the same language. They are the exact same thing. Hindi has a lot of words that are borrowed from Sanskrit, not that it's ever going to give them back, and Urdu has a lot of words borrowed from Arabic. But none of this really impedes communication any more than the differences between American and British English impede communication across the Atlantic in English. But obviously there's some cultural issues as far as Hinduism and Islam go. And this means that to speak Hindi is to identify with, for example, India and a particular religion. To speak Urdu is to identify usually with Pakistan and being a Muslim. There are tensions there. Add to that that Hindi is written in the Devanagari script, and that then you have the Arabic script, which Urdu is written in, and you have the sense that these are somehow different languages. But really, they are the same language. Communication is not a problem. The sense that there's something called Urdu, which should be taught with different books than something called Hindi, is based on vicissitudes of history and culture rather than anything inherent to the language itself. And so if we were going to do a kind of a God's eye view of that spinning globe, and we were going to look at how language works in India and Pakistan, there would be this one language spoken, which you might call something like Urdi or something like that. But they're officially considered something separate because of issues beyond what the languages actually entail. And you see this sort of thing all over the world. In New York, your cab driver, I say this as if everybody lives in New York. I'm sorry for that. If you happen to live in New York, then you probably take cabs a lot. And if you do, then your cab driver might speak a language called Bambara. That's what Africans speak in regions such as Senegal and Mali and Guinea. Or your driver might say that he speaks something called Malinke. Or he might say that he speaks something like Djula. Now, if you talk to the drivers about these languages, and you say, oh, so you're a Bambara. You ever heard Djula? They say, oh, yeah, I understand Djula. I can talk to them. It's kind of interesting because if you talk to an Albanian and you say, well, you know, you heard Greek? Well, the Albanian is not going to say, oh, yeah, I can talk to them unless they've been taught Greek, because they're completely different languages. The German who has never had any language training in school doesn't say, oh yeah, I went to Hungary, I could understand it. Because no, they didn't. They were separate languages. Why these African cab drivers might say this is because Bambara, Malinke, and Djula are all along a continuum. They are all basically one language. It varies from region to region. None of these languages are written down a whole lot. They don't have literatures. And so what we're talking about may have to do with particular geopolitical boundaries and having a literature, but it may just be language on the ground as it is. There is a particular language that varies from place to place that's used as a kind of lingua franca in that region of Africa. And what a language is and what a dialect is kind of beside the point to the people who are speaking these different varieties of a language. Obviously, there's something kind of in between going on, and that's fine with them. It even is different from person to person according to the language. On New Britain, off of New Guinea, there are two supposed languages called Turai and Aria. Now, if a linguist looks at Turai and Aria on the page, they look like variations of the same thing. They look about like Swedish and Danish. Just kind of, it's the same thing that's different. Now, what's interesting is that even though if you are from the area but you don't speak Turai or Aria, then you learn the same thing to speak to both. You don't think of yourself as learning two languages. The Turai think of the Aria as speaking a different language based on some vocabulary differences and difference in accent. They just think, oh, that's a whole different language. But the Aria think of themselves as speaking Turai. So who's right? Well, I suspect that we can say that the Aria are right. These things are very similar, but the Turai have reasons for thinking of there being some sort of difference between them. It's not based on the language itself. So very often, what we might reasonably think of as variations on a theme are thought of as separate languages for various reasons which are quite external to anything about speaking or the languages themselves. And so the personal interferes with the empirical here, as is so common in this veil of tears called life. In the same way, very often what we would quite reasonably see as, if we're going to allow this term any validity, languages, as separate languages, really are thought of as variations on the same thing, again, because of these cultural reasons. So, for example, we often hear about the Chinese dialects, Mandarin and Cantonese. But really, that's a misnomer because Mandarin and Cantonese are every bit as different as French and Spanish. And so if a Mandarin person has to learn Cantonese, or as is more often the case, vice versa, it's not a matter of wrapping your ear around some new words. It's not a matter even of Russian to Ukrainian. You're learning a new tongue. You need class. You need school. You need Berlitz. You're going to suffer. It's completely different. And there are seven main, what are often called dialects in China, and they're all that different. And so, for example, if you meet someone who speaks Taiwanese, that is utterly and completely different from both Mandarin and Cantonese. If you meet somebody who speaks Shanghainese, that one is completely different again. Then there are three other varieties that are not encountered very much by Westerners, but they're all just as different again from the other four. And even beyond that, when you talk about Taiwanese and the version of that spoken inland, which is often called Hokkien or Fujianese, and we have some immigrants who speak those varieties in the United States, they are technically the same thing. They are all one of these quote-unquote dialects. But especially on the mainland, Fujianese can differ so much from village to village that people have trouble understanding each other. So what there really are many, many Chinese languages that are spoken in China. So in Mandarin, for example, I is wo. In Cantonese, it's mo. Completely different word. In Mandarin, the word for car is chedzi. Pardon my Mandarin pronunciation, you Mandarin speakers. In Cantonese, it's gatze. It's completely different languages. But because they're related languages, just like the Romance languages, they have similar grammars. The words tend to come in similar order, although not the exact same order. And Chinese languages are considered dialects partly because they happen to be written with the same writing system. And the Chinese writing system is not based on alphabet like English's, but it's based on pictures of concepts. Not completely, but that is the heart of the system. So as a result, if in language A you say bu qi da bu, that's a nonsense sentence, and then in language B you say ga pi ze bu, well, if those mean all the same thing, if both of those are ways of saying dog jump off table, even if the people can't understand each other, if what the language writing system depicts is dog jump off table, then everybody who speaks these different languages can read and write in the same way. So there is a single Chinese writing system. That, plus the fact that China has a certain sense of cultural identity, creates the idea that all of these people are speaking the Chinese language. But really, these are not dialects of a single Chinese language. There are a whole bunch of Chinese languages in China. Arabic is another example of this. And so we're often told, it's a funny statement that you get sometimes, the Moroccan has trouble making himself understood with the Syrian in Arabic. And that's always put as if there was any chance of them understanding each other. Actually, the Moroccan and the Syrian speak completely different languages. So standard Arabic, the Arabic of the Quran or the modern standard Arabic that you would get taught in a college Arabic course where you always seem to learn like five words of Arabic and halfway learn how to read the writing system and then it's summer and then you forget it all. Whatever you pick up in that class is essentially like Latin to the Romance languages. That is what in the Arab world is written in. That's what you read in. The Arabics that are spoken actually on the ground are not usually written. That is the Arabic as it's given in the news, etc. But that language is completely different from the Arabic that anybody learns at home bouncing on their mother's knee. And there are many, many, many regional Arabics which are as different from this Latin Arabic, so to speak, as French, Spanish, and Italian are from Latin. So, for example, the word for nothing. In Algerian Arabic, it's she. In Tunisian Arabic, it's shy. In Nigerian Arabic, it's she. Nothing in Morocco is walu. In Saudi Arabian Arabic, or Gulf Arabic, walashai. In Egyptian Arabic, supposedly the same language, it's dilwati. And then in Libya, it's kan ilbarka. Obviously, these are very different tongues. So the idea that it's interesting that the Moroccan can barely make himself understood with the Syrian is kind of peculiar, because that's almost like saying, well, golly, the French person can barely make himself understood in Romania. Well, that's what we would expect of different languages. But, again, all of these varieties are united by a writing system. Most people who speak all of these different languages only encounter anything like their language in this one special archaic variety, which is written in the Arabic script. If anybody happens to deign to write, say, Egyptian Arabic or something, again, it'll be in that script. Then, of course, there is the cultural unity, Arab plus Islam. So the people themselves often think of themselves as all speaking one language, despite the fact that face-to-face, indeed, the Moroccan and the Egyptian might as well be speaking Spanish and Italian. They can make out some bits here and there. But when you see these on the page, it's quite clear that they are not a single language in any sense, which makes it very difficult dealing diplomatically with the Arabic language. If someone today is trained in Arabic, you can speak modern standard Arabic like a demon. And if you go to, for example, Iraq, then particularly with people who do not have as much access to education, such as women and children, you are at a complete linguistic handicap. If you're dealing with a sheltered female person or a child, running around speaking modern standard Arabic would be like running around in early Gaul or France speaking Latin. You know, only a certain class of people are going to get it. Iraqi Arabic is a completely different language. And then, of course, Arabic is, depending on how you count it, a couple of dozen languages. And then there's just that one writing system that is not what anybody actually lives in. So it can be a problem, but Arabic is very much a matter of various languages, which are called dialects because of this conception of cultural unity. Then finally, there is the problem of what linguists call dialect continua. So if we're trying to say that there's a definite such thing as a language and a definite such thing as a dialect, then something that really makes us stub a toe is the fact that there are times when, as you go from region to region to region, the language keeps changing a little bit to the point where next door they're speaking a different, what you might call dialect. Then after that, two doors down, it's different dialect from that, but the two doors behind, you can still understand them. But then after you get seven doors down, you have lost the ability to understand what they're saying, although the people seven doors down can understand the people from six doors down from you. So, for example, there is a group of languages not well known in the Western world in Ethiopia. Ethiopia is home to, in part, languages related to, counterintuitively enough, Arabic and Hebrew over on the other side of the Red Pond. The big dude language in Ethiopia is Amharic, but there are other related languages that are less known. There is one language, so to speak, that's called Gurage, and it's spoken by villagers. It's not written in any serious way. It's a dialect continuum. And so, for example, if you want to say he thatched a roof, then there are seven different varieties that you can look at. One of them is called soddo. And the way you say he thatched a roof is one word, and that's kaddanam. That's how you say it. Now, if you go to the region next door, then there's the gogot variety. And instead of kaddanam, then you still have kaddanam. But then if you go next door to gogot, then you have what's called muur. And there, instead of saying kaddanam, you say khaddanam. Now, obviously, nobody's going to have trouble understanding what khaddanam means if you grew up with kaddanam. But then, next door to the muur are the Aja. And the way they say that word is not khaddanam, but khaddaram. And so they have this little R stuck in. Then, if you're speaking chaha, then instead of khaddaram, it's khaddaram. And the difference between the short and the extended D is very important in these languages. So, khaddaram and khaddaram, it's a big difference if you speak Gurage. Then in Gieto, instead of khaddaram, it's khattara. And so we've lost the M at the end, and the D has become a T. Then in Andagan, way over at the end, then instead of khattara, it's khattara. So, all of these things just go step by step by step. Anyone you meet who speaks any of these varieties would say, I speak Gurage. But if you're a Soddo, then to say he thatched the roof, you say kaddanam. If you are an Andagan, you say hattara. Now those are very different. Now we're getting into the difference between, say, the words for mouth in French and Spanish. French is bouche. Spanish is boca. Now, if we happen to be language heads, and maybe we've looked at those two languages, and we can think of them on the page so we can see the relationship. But imagine if your language is just an oral language, as most languages are, and you're just dealing with it through the ear. And so, bush, boca, those are two different languages, even though you can see how the words are alike. In the same way, kaddanam and then hatara are completely different words. But at no point can you say that a new language has begun. It's just been a kind of a continuum. Turkey and Turkic languages are the same way. So, for example, Turkish is one of a litter. Turkish is like French and its pals. There's a litter of languages that stretch eastward across the new kind of Stan countries into western China. And so there's Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, these new countries on the globe, which as I get older, I can never remember the capitals of and can't remember the way they look. I used to pride myself on knowing the globe. I used to be able to say, there's Bulgaria, there's Bhutan, and I knew the capital, and I thought that was very special. But now there are all these stans, and they all seem alike if you don't know anything about them. It's hard to remember the capitals. Aging is really, really hard. But in any case, there are these stans. And the languages of many of these stans look like dialects of one another to the untrained eye. So, for example, in Turkish, 8 is sekiz. In Azerbaijani, it's sakiz. In Turkmen, it's sekiz. In Uzbek, it's sakiz. In Kazakh, it's segiz. In Kyrgyz, it's segiz. In Uyghur, it's sekiz. Now, they're all very much akin. That's not even like khaddanam and hatara. They all seem like basically the same word, and what seems to vary is whether or not the person had their mouth full or something like that. It's all the same, eight. But they're all considered separate languages, and the reason for that is that each one of them is spoken in what is a separate political entity. There's no such thing when it comes to Gurage as Chaha land or Moor land. They're all spoken in the same land. So those are all seen as the same thing. So it's the Gurage language, even though they get very different. Whereas all of these Turkic varieties seem kind of like dialects in a way, but they're considered different languages because there are these geopolitical lines between them. So you end up seeing that the whole issue of language and dialect is one of those that is kind of like, where do you draw the line? If you are at a party and you don't know what to say, and it's easy not to know what to say, there are two things that you can always say that will get you into the conversation. One of them is to say, well, you know, where do you draw the line? No matter what people are talking about, if you say that, that fits into the topic. I've used it often. And then another thing is somebody says something, you go, I'll bet. No matter what they said, if you say, I'll bet, that lends a note of spice to the conversation. But anyway, where do you draw the line? So between language and dialect. And even Scots is this kind of thing. So Auld Lang Syne, that actually means old, long since. Do we think of that? No. Would we be able to reconstruct that? It might be a good guess, but there are other things we might think. But then on the other hand, Scots doesn't seem like a completely different language. We can relate to it. And so if somebody says something like, give me what I have riktil, and we're told that what that means is give me what I have a right to. Well, gi for give and richt for right and till for to, they're not so difficult. Actually, those are things that a Scandinavian would recognize. There's a heavier Scandinavian influence in Scottish, Scots. If they say a twish for between, if they say twa for two, if they say kintra for country, well, to us, it's different. You'd rather not have to listen to things that different from what you're used to running by you if you've had a little to drink or if you get tired. But it doesn't seem like it's a separate language, really. So is it a separate language or is it a dialect? Or is it one of those things where really the question has no meaning? And I think it's the latter. So it's a continuum concept. We can't draw this line, not because I don't enjoy drawing lines as much as a lot of people do, but because really we're just dealing with a continuum concept. So what we see is that when we're talking about what a language and what a dialect is, for one thing, it's a continuum concept. For another thing, it doesn't correspond with the boundaries of countries. For a third thing, it's not about one variety being somehow better than the other or more coherent. And another thing that it's not about, and this bears mentioning, is that in terms of looking at how languages are spoken, there's no logic in something that we're often taught in school, which is that a language is a variety of speech that has a literature and is written down and that is used at the airport, and then everything else is a dialect. So, for example, I was once told by someone who grew up in Bolivia that she had been taught that Spanish was a language because it was at the airport. And that the languages spoken by Amerindian peoples there, such as Guarani and Aymara and Quechua, those were dialects because they're not written down. Now, it's true that those languages are rarely written down. But we can't say that they're just dialects because, for one thing, if there's a whiff in that notion that because these languages aren't written down and they're not at the airport and there aren't enormous dictionaries that are sitting on people's shelves next to the Reader's Digest and the ceramic pitcher, that somehow they're primitive. Well, no. So, for example, Quechua has got endings to show how a noun fits into a sentence that are often very reminiscent of Latin. Spanish does not have that. And, in fact, the languages spoken by indigenous peoples in South America tend to be massively complicated, much more so than the good old Spanish that has tested our English language second language learning abilities in school. So in no sense are they dialects in somehow being lesser, because they're actually quite hard. And in general, we might want to have some sort of designation for a language that's written versus a language that isn't. But I don't know if saying language and dialect will really help, because those two terms come loaded with a notion of ranking that doesn't make any logical sense when you look at these things. Generally, a linguist says that there are written languages, only about 200 out of the 6,000 in the world, and then there are languages that are used orally. You might call them oral languages. And so there's less baggage in that kind of designation, and it seems to correspond with what the reality happens to be. So, now that we have seen how languages and dialects work, we can move on to the next lecture.